This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Last week, the fund established to pay victims of the attacks on 9/11 closed up shop. Kenneth Feinberg, the administrator of the September the 11th Victim Compensation Fund, issued his final report and signed the last checks. In all, he and his team processed more than 7,300 claims and issued more than 5,500 awards. Critics call the fund a bailout for the airline industry and blast the formulas used to determine how much to give to families and survivors. But most credit Feinberg and his team with doing the impossible. They helped many families and victims to move forward. 98% of the families of those killed or injured on 9/11 participated in the fund. Their cases are now settled. As part of the deal, they've agreed not to file lawsuits. Most of the remaining 2% have filed suit. It may be years before those cases conclude. Later in the program, we'll talk with NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman about Friday night's brawl at the end of the Pacers-Pistons basketball game outside of Detroit. But first, the 9/11 Compensation Fund. If you have questions about how the process worked, the basis for deciding the value of a life, or what might have been done differently, give us a phone call. The number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We'd be especially interested to hear from any of you who participated in this process. Kenneth Feinberg, the former administrator of the fund, joins us here in Studio 3A, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Your position has been described, if not God, at least Solomon.
Well, there was a certain degree of Solomonic discretion that I had to exercise. I had some guidance from the Congress in setting up the program, the do's and don'ts, and I had tremendous support from the Attorney General, John Ashcroft, from the President, and from the Congress as well.
Was there a moment, though, when you said, oh, please, can't you get somebody else to do this?
No, there wasn't. The beginning of the program, obviously, the law was enacted so soon after 9/11. Emotion was very, very raw among the families, understandably. That was the toughest time. But as the program evolved over almost 3 years, anger and frustration turned into support, or at least acknowledgement that we were trying to do some good.
And the basic questions I guess people had is, how do you determine a value for somebody's life?
Well, you don't, of course. Juries every day in every city, village, and hamlet in this country decide not the value of a life, but what a wronged victim would have earned over a lifetime, but for death or physical injury. Mm-hmm. That's what I had to do. It wasn't really placing any value on the moral intrinsic worth of a life. It was rather trying to estimate, with great difficulty, what would that victim had earned over a lifetime, but for 9/11.
There were also many less prominent cases, but many cases nonetheless, of people who were injured or lost a limb or something like that. And in fact, there's good precedence on those cases, too.
Oh, yes. Again, juries do it. And what was difficult here was asking in a very visible, open way, how does one man or one individual with this discretion calculate and predict, not speculate, what somebody would have earned, and that's difficult.
And in the process, make it seem like it's fair to everybody.
Well, that was the essential feature of the program. What we had to do was not act as accountants or as number crunchers, but we had to put a human face on this program, and we did by reaching out to the families, meeting with them, town hall meetings, individual meetings, giving any family that wanted it an opportunity to come in and be heard. And I think that really was a critical component explaining the success of the program.
One of the oddities of the program is, yes, everybody comes in, everybody who wanted to be heard was heard. But once the decision was made, the decision was final.
That's right. Congress spelled out in the statute no appeals to the courts. You could appeal to me personally from an earlier ruling one of my designees might make, and you could come in and see me if you didn't like the award, but you could not go to court. That was prohibited by statute.
No higher authority, not even the President of the United States.
Nobody.
And that's difficult for some people to, in this litigious society, to deal with.
Well, it was difficult for people to cope, but after a while they realized that the alternative, protracted litigation, you said at the outside, Neil, of the program, years and years, the Libya Pan Am 103 disaster is still in court after 15 years. And this program, with expedited compensation, expedited consideration, I think provided most families with a degree of psychological closure. Here's the check. Try and move on as best you can. And I think that worked in the great, great majority of the cases.
And another of the goals of this was to limit the number of people who would file lawsuits. That was Congress's goal, not necessarily yours.
That was Congress's goal, and we succeeded. There are only today less than 80 total lawsuits of death claims arising out of 9/11. And I think that that statistic demonstrates perhaps better than any that we lived up to the congressional objective.
We know that a lot of you have questions for Kenneth Feinberg, and our number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Let's begin with Lisa. Lisa's calling from Jenkintown, Pennsylvania.
Hello?
Hello, Lisa. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to know why anyone should be compensated for this tragedy. We all agree that it's a horrible tragedy, but the whole phenomenon of compensation for bad things just propagates our very litigious society, and I don't get it. I thought that's what life insurance was for.
That's a very, very good question.
Thank you.
The basis for the program was a view expressed by Congress that 9/11 was different, Lisa, different from any other national tragedy. And I think what happened I think what happened here is Congress decided that a sort of vindictive generosity, the idea that we will show those terrorists, those murderers, that far from dividing the country, they have united the country. And I really do believe that there's a lot to be said for the notion that Congress decided a program like this would exhibit the type of compassion and generosity that would otherwise not be as visible. And I think that's the reason. I think you have to look at this program from the perspective of the country and the nation rather than the uniqueness of the victims.
And I don't buy it. I mean, that's good political rhetoric, but everyone knows that this is a terrible thing, but terrible things happen all the time. And when terrible things happen and all kinds of things, if we just promote litigation, this is a very bad thing. This is what's causing problems with malpractice. This is what's causing things with people who slip and slide. I mean, I understand that the whole 9/11 is a different phenomenon, but it's a bad precedent.
Lisa, the point of this, I thought, was to reduce litigation, to get people to agree to a compensation fund and not file suit.
No, I think that nobody should get compensated for that.
And
that's why we have life insurance. And then to say that one person gets a certain amount of money is ridiculous. That's why the people who work in the towers have life insurance. And that's why if I get hit by a train today, my family wouldn't sue because of whatever. I have life insurance. That's what it's for. Why should somebody get money because of a tragic phenomenon? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Thank you for the call, Lisa.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Kenneth Feinberg, I know you got a lot of those same questions, particularly the people who were injured in the first attack of the World Trade Center. They weren't compensated. Other al-Qaeda victims, the embassies in East Africa, they weren't compensated.
2 points. First, I think that you can't get very far with this argument by focusing on the nature of the victim. I really do believe that this program can only be justified by examining the nation through its elected representatives, the Congress's response. Secondly, I must say that the statute required me to offset life insurance, Lisa's point. If somebody had $2 million in life insurance and would otherwise get a $2.5 million award, I was required by statute to offset that life insurance, subtract it from any award. In other words, this program really was sort of a second layer of life insurance, a safety net, which would kick in if and only if there weren't other means of economic survival following 9/11.
As we know, many of the families of the firefighters and police who, other uniformed personnel who lost their lives, got some compensation from various charities that were set up after 9/11. Were you asked to discount those as well?
We thought about that. That's one area, charity, private charity, which we did not offset. We thought about offsetting it, but when I visited with the charities, they made it very clear that if I was going to offset $2.5 billion worth of private charity, unprecedented in the history of the country, if I was going to offset that, they would hold back that charitable money till I issued my awards so that it wouldn't subsidize the taxpayers' awards. And so we decided, as a practical matter, we didn't want to be responsible for holding back that charity, so we did not offset charity.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Lakshan, who's calling from Natick, Massachusetts.
Yeah, hi. In the first place, I saw an interview that you gave just before this whole process started, and I said, oh my God, what a Himalayan task. So my congratulations on a great job done. And I have one question. You know, I had read about undocumented workers working in the building, and so how did their claims get settled?
They were included in the fund. The Congress did not distinguish or discriminate between American citizens, undocumented workers, foreign claimants. Were paid from 65 foreign countries. And this is because Congress decided in the statute that anybody who died or was physically injured is eligible. And we managed, after some difficulty, to find the 13 families of undocumented workers who died in the World Trade Center. And we managed to find them, locate them, and convince them to file without fear of repercussion or sanction or penalty. And all of them, as far as we can tell, all of them did file with the program.
That's great. Thank you. You answered my question. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Lakshan. Let's go quickly to Don. Don's calling from San Diego.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. This is a follow-up to one of the previous questions. The level of compensation in millions for the victims of 9/11, compare that to the dramatically lower compensation given to our soldiers who were killed in the line of duty, or civilian police or fire people who were also killed or injured in the line of duty. I do not understand this national commitment that your guest has talked about when compared to the type of sacrifice that these other individuals make. I do not understand it, and I'd be interested in his views on that.
Thanks, Don.
The rationale is as follows. Again, looking to Congress. Since Congress, in this legislation, raised serious, serious barriers to lawsuits, if you wanted to sue, you could, but you would have to sue in New York City, wherever you might live. You had to sue in New York, you had to sue in federal court, there was a cap on what you could recover. Congress decided, I believe, well, since lawsuits, where a pot of gold might be available if you can win, are to be discouraged, we will replicate, basically, the formula for compensating those who can prove their case. So whether you agree or not, I think the rationale was, since you're not going to be effectively able to litigate, as Neil said earlier, we're discouraging lawsuits, we'll create a program that will allow you to basically compute along the same lines and along the same formula as if you were able to litigate. And that accounts for, I think, the large size of the awards, which you are correct, are way beyond anything that Congress ever authorized before.
Mm. But the soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, police, fire, all of those who were killed on 9/11 were compensated according to your formula, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Don, thank you very much for the call. We'll be back with more with Kenneth Feinberg after a short break. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, TOTN at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the September 11th Victim Compensation Fund, which officially finished its job last week. We're asking what worked, what didn't, and what might be done differently in the case of another large-scale terrorist attack. Our guest is Kenneth Feinberg, administrator of the fund. Of course, you're invited to join us. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Here's an email from Joe in South Dakota. Did anyone who would otherwise be qualified for compensation under the fund who didn't intend to sue walk away from compensation under the fund as a matter of principle?
Another great question. 13 families did nothing. They didn't litigate. They missed the deadline for entering the fund. They did absolutely nothing. I met with most of those 13 families, and the reason they did nothing was grief. Clinically depressed. They couldn't get out of bed to fill out the forms. I said to one lady, Mrs. Jones, I'll help you fill out the form. You're going to get about $2 million tax-free. Just sign the application and I'll help you. And she said, leave the application on the kitchen table. Please go away. I lost my son. There's nothing I can do. My life is over. I go, Mrs. Jones, you're compounding the crime here. Set up a foundation in the name of your son. Do something with the money. And she never did. She, as far as I know, is unable to put pen to paper.
13 families. Like
13.
That. Yeah. It does raise another issue. People were paid for physical damage. If you were looking out the window and you lived in southern Manhattan and saw people leaping off the World Trade Center to their death, there's no money set aside for emotional anguish or grief or anything like that.
That's correct. We decided precisely that example. We decided that if we were going to start compensating people for emotional distress, for mental anguish, we would end up paying millions of people who watched the disaster on CNN or on NPR. And we concluded that there had to be some limitation. And the limitation we decided upon in the regulations was physical injury.
Mm-hmm. Here's another email question. This one from Paul Raitt. I hope I'm mispronouncing that too badly, here in Washington. While I'm glad the Victims Compensation Fund saved the airlines and my frequent flyer miles, I am concerned that it has set a dangerous precedent. We hear numerous reports that many industries are not spending enough to protect the public from the effect of terror attacks on their facilities. I suspect they're not making the effort because they assume if there is an attack, the government will shield them now from responsibility.
I think that's unlikely. I think this program really is not much of a precedent at all. I view it as rather unique, a unique response to a very unique historical event. And I doubt very much that the program will ever be replicated, at least in this generous fashion. There's plenty of precedent for modest compensation to the victims of workplace injuries or to the victims of tragedies. Mm-hmm. Firemen and policemen are eligible to get $250,000 if they're killed in the line of duty. I don't think this program will likely be a precedent for much going forward.
Do you see that there would be an opportunity now to create a piece of legislation to set up a mechanism that wouldn't be set up in the emotional aftermath of another such attack, sort of like the way the president declares disaster areas or something like that, and would put a mechanism into motion?
Well, people have thought about it. Again, I'd be surprised if Congress would get near this, having done this once for reasons that I've already said were rather historically unique. I think it's probably unlikely and probably unwise for Congress to tinker with the notion of an entitlement program in the event of certain terrorist attacks.
Let's get another caller on the line. Lawrence joins us from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, two questions. First of all, if you can clarify, please, as I understood, the charitable fund, there was billions of dollars that was distributed, and it included up to and including limousine drivers and people that were in the immediate area. Is that correct?
That's correct. That has nothing to do with my fund.
Right.
There was about $2.5 billion of
correct.
Private okay. charitable giving which was distributed.
Right. So my question is. Partially, I'm not sure why we chose to go ahead and establish this fund. And the second part of that is, doesn't it set precedent in defining or implicating the United States government in some capacity that by compensating, it's saying that we are somehow or another liable to...
We, the government, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
We're paying for it, so it seems like we're accepting liability, and that sets precedence for future.
Or for those people who did decide to go ahead and sue.
The government has never, ever given the slightest suggestion that this is some type of reparations program. This is a payment in return for an acknowledgement of fault. To the contrary, the government has gone out of its way to explain that this is not a reparations program. It is not payment because of some moral blameworthiness, but rather is a program designed with a government taxpayer generosity and compassion in mind. And you will notice that the payments reflect that. The repayments are not uniform. They are not flat, one size fits all. Instead, they are individually tailored payments to citizens based on economic loss. So it's a fair point you make, but I think the government has gone out of its way to express no responsibility for 9/11 whatsoever.
Now, suing the government is also not the easiest thing in the world.
They're immune.
Lawrence, thank you.
Why now, I guess, is the question. If there has been compensation, and many people are in the process of the grief process, it seems to open that up again and relive it, to have to reapply and re-explain and revisit their lost loved ones.
Or the alternative, Lawrence, being to go to court and testify to all of that some years down the road, and then again in the appeal, and then in the subsequent appeal.
Okay. Well, that in itself does make sense.
All right.
That answers that question.
All right. Thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you.
Bye. Sorry, you wanted to say something?
No.
All right. Let's go now to Barry. Barry's calling from Georgetown, Massachusetts.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
How are you? Listen, I just had a question. I was wondering if you had any cases of gay couples that had sued, and if you treated them any differently than married couples, and how that all worked out.
That's a good question. Congress and the statute didn't say one word about who gets the money or who should file the claim. We followed the will of the deceased. If the deceased left a will and left money to a gay partner or a fiancé or a third uncle or a sixth cousin, we tried to follow the expressed intent of the victim. If the victim had no will, and 80% of these people did not, then we followed the law of the victim's domicile and provided compensation to whoever under that law said was eligible. Now, that didn't allow, except in Vermont, that didn't allow for gay partners to receive compensation, but we managed to work out and mediate most of those squabbles between gay partners, fiancés, parents, spouses, children. We managed to work out all but a handful of those cases with the consent of everybody, and today, as I speak to you, I believe there are only about a dozen claims out of over 7,000 that are being litigated in court over who gets the money.
In other words, of the money you gave, who's squabbling over who gets what?
Just about a dozen cases.
Okay, Barry, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
That was my question, Neil. Was who was squabbling? Was it the victim's family versus the gay partner, or what?
It's all over the lot. We've got victim's family and gay partners. We've got fiancés arguing with a spouse. We've got sibling rivalry. There are only about a dozen cases, and there's no trend. It's dependent on the facts of the particular facts of the family dispute. But Congress really didn't give me much guidance on that. We worked out all but these handful. They're litigating now in a state and surrogates court.
Barry, thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Was there any quantifiable difference in the cases that you were presented with from the Pentagon and those that were involved in the World Trade Center and obviously the other plane that crashed in Pennsylvania?
Of course. The World Trade Center generally involved some of the higher income wage earners. The Pentagon involved almost all military or civilian personnel associated with the Pentagon. So the average award of some of those Pentagon claimants is, of course, a lot lower than the average award that would go to the stockbroker or the bond trader in the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm. Now let's get to another phone call, and let's try Brandon. Brandon's calling from Milwaukee.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I've got two quick questions here. The first one is regarding that $2.5 billion of private charity funds that was earmarked for victims of the tragedy.
Yes.
I'm wondering why, with that amount of money there, it was necessary for the government to award anything in addition, because $2.5 billion seems like quite a substantial amount of money.
If I could short-circuit that by simply answering, Congress decided when it passed the legislation we are going to distribute X amount of money.
All righty. And the second question I had was, why didn't that money come from funds that were frozen in Al-Qaeda accounts or from other terrorist organizations so that the taxpayers wouldn't
as subsuits were brought against Iran for various terrorist and hostage incidents, Terry Anderson's, for example. Go ahead.
The government thought it would take too long. The Congress thought it would take too long to get around the legal hurdles associated with unfreezing and seizing those assets. I should say the government has reserved the right to get reimbursed for money that I spent as part of this program. The money, the government has reserved the right to make a claim against any of those frozen accounts or other sources in order to recoup some of the money that was spent pursuant to this program.
I assume that these kinds of accounts being somewhat elusive in the first place, it's going to take a long time to work out this litigation of, yes, this was terrorist money, and yes, it can be correctly seized.
Exactly. That's why Congress felt we didn't have the time. Don't forget, this program was enacted weeks after 9/11. At the time this program was enacted into law, Congress wasn't even sure where such frozen accounts were or how much would be available. Congress, the first step Congress wanted to take was to immediately send a message that this money would be available to victims, and then later on figure out ways, perhaps, to recoup all or part of it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the call, Brandon.
Thank you.
What can you tell us about those people who applied and did not get an award? I mean, we read a couple of cases that seemed to be, you know, outright extortion, but those I would think would have been very much in the minority.
Oh, very much in the minority. We had, in the entire program, of over 7,000 applications, I believe that the number of suspicious claims was no more than a dozen. No more than a dozen. Now, we rejected, not because of any fraud or any alleged criminality, we rejected certain claims people were simply ineligible. For example, as you said, Neil, we would reject a claim of somebody who in good faith filed a claim for mental anguish. We rejected over 2,000 physical injury claims. And I think we rejected, a couple of a hundred or so ineligible death claims.
When you were in this process, I wonder, what did you go home and read at night?
Wasn't so much reading as taking advantage as best I could of additional visits to the opera, additional visits to Carnegie Hall and the Kennedy Center, taking in as many programs, concerts as I could. Very supportive family, very supportive administration, the Attorney General. I am in his debt for his support of the program. And overall, the press and everybody, the American people were extremely supportive of this program, and that certainly helped.
I wonder, was there any point you said, you know, it's been a while since I read Dostoevsky. Maybe I should go reread that.
No, not Dostoevsky.
No, maybe not.
Maybe
not Dostoevsky.
A poor choice. Maybe something. I don't know. But I managed to escape as best I could.
We're speaking with Kenneth Feinberg, who was the administrator of the September the 11th Victim Compensation Fund. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get John on. John is calling from Hanover, Pennsylvania.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question was, what is the total cost after everything is said and done of this program? And then the second question would be, and I'll take it off the air, what is the lower end and the upper end of what the awards were? Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for the call, John.
Total cost paid out to claimants was a shade over $7 billion at a cost of about $86 million. A very cost-effective program, considering the amount of money that was cut and paid to eligible claimants. The largest award actually was to a survivor. a burn victim, burned over with third-degree burns over 85% of his body, and that payment was a little bit over $8 million. And the lowest payment was $500 for, I believe, a broken finger at the World Trade Center. The lowest payment that we made for any death claim, I think, was around $500,000.
We should point that amongst those administrative expenses, your salary line was zero.
That's right. I worked for nothing. I worked pro bono in this matter.
Cindy joins us. Cindy's on the line from Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Hi. My name's Cindy, and I'm from Foxborough, Massachusetts. I lost my husband, Mike, in the World Trade Center towers, and I filed for compensation under the Victims' Compensation Fund. And I think that although Mr. Feinberg did a really difficult job and I thought did it well, I think the parts of the fund were very flawed to begin with. And there is one thing that I'd like to say to start is that I wish people would stop saying $2 million on average, because my family didn't get even close to that. And now every time everyone sees me, they think $2 million, I'm going to be just fine. I think that part of the biggest flaw in the program was that the compensation for non-economic losses. I have two very small children who were totally traumatized with this and will be in therapy probably for the rest of their lives, one of which was hospitalized. How is this fund ever going to even be able to begin to address that for my family? I think that, although, like I said, I think Mr. Feinberg did a good job, I think that the parameters that he was given were flawed in many ways. I think people look at us and they see, well, they're just a bunch of million-dollar widows, and we're not. We're struggling just like everybody else is to plan for our children's future and to provide the best benefits for them. Beginning this year, my COBRA benefits will start to run out, and I'm going to have to pay for private health insurance. Mm-hmm. All of that is really weighing on my mind, and because of my children and their problems, I'm unable to work right now.
Let's. We just have a minute left, but to get a response from Kevin.
I think it's a well point. Anybody who thinks this program is some sort of valid substitute for a lost loved one, I think is incorrect. I think that at best, the program is designed to help the victims of 9/11 and their families. But I haven't met many families who wouldn't give anything to have the loved one back.
Cindy, thank you. And we are all, I think as you know this, everybody is very respectful of your loss. But it's a good point you make that obviously the loss does not end and the fund does not compensate for everything.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, the other point that I wanted to make was nobody ever talks about the airline bailout that they got the day after September 11th.
Cindy, thank you for that. We appreciate it. Kenneth Feinberg, thank you for your service and your time today.